A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 360. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about Dead of Night. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Dead of Night was a 1972 BBC anthology horror series. There were 7 50-minute episodes broadcast, but only 3 of them survive in the archive. We talked about 2 last time. They contain some great names, the actors in front of the camera, but also the creators behind the camera that we've been nodding to as we go along. And it's contemporary horror for the time, with interesting themes broadcast in the run-up to Christmas, which makes them perfect for our seasonal chills that we always try to cover at this time of the year, particularly as the first episode was in fact set at Christmas. So it is some December ghost stories for us here on British Invaders, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. And there is that wonderful British tradition of Christmas ghost stories. So it's nice to be able to fit in with that in our own way. The final episode of Dead of Night, the 3rd one we can watch, it was the last one broadcast of the original 7 episodes. We mentioned that 4 of them are missing. This was A Woman Sobbing, was broadcast on December 17th, 1972. And it was written by John Bowen, who we remember from his writing Robin Redbreast. And it was directed by Paul Capissoni. And he had directed episodes of Adam Adamant Lives, and he would go on to direct An Englishman's Castle. So some very good direction work he would go on to there. And this one stars Anna Massey and Ronald Hines.
Yes, and it's interesting that An Englishman's Castle also keeps coming up since we discovered that show. A recent highlight for us, Brian.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's another well-to-do middle-class couple who've made the move out to the country. Seems to be a bit of a theme for television at the time, I think, Brian. But all is not going well in their new, or rather their old country house that they've taken residence in, particularly because Anna Massey's character, the wife, is troubled, in fact haunted, by the sound of a woman crying during the night, the woman sobbing of the title. And this leads to an awful lot of problems in their relationship between her and her husband. There's some suggestions that the relationship wasn't all that solid to begin with. Her mental health is called into question, and they specifically mention in the show that film Gaslight, which of course has now become quite popular parlance for one powerful figure trying to what would you say, Brian? Gaslight is obviously the phrase I'm looking for, but you know, bend another person's mind or convince another person's mind that they may be going mad or something like that.
Yes. To convince someone else that reality is somehow different from what they think it is.
It's also got, I thought, a nod to a famous horror story, The Yellow Wallpaper by Charlotte Perkins Gilman, where the character there, again, it seems to be either experiencing something supernatural or a mental illness or being in some ways restrained or captured by a sort of domineering male character. So that's a very interesting callback as well.
Yes, and this one seems to have sort of real haunted house kinds of elements to it. And while Innes Lloyd, the producer, had been saying there are no gothic elements or late night noises in Dead of Night, they do seem to be there in this episode.
They do, yes. This is the one Anna Massey is often seen going up to the attic at night wearing a long white nightgown. which gives you a sort of certain gothic feel. And I think when most people talk about that quote you mentioned last time from Innes Lloyd about strange noises at night and gothic elements, a lot of people then say, well, a woman sobbing seems to have those elements. But anyway, there you go.
Yes, and we should note that there are some quite uncomfortable things in this particular episode. It has some issues with stereotyping and sexism, also depictions of mental illness and electroshock therapy.
Yes, content note, and we will be coming back to talk about some of the stereotyping issues shortly, because you picked up on those when we were watching, Brian.
Yes, there are some issues there for sure. But before that, we should talk about the missing episodes, because there were these other four episodes that we can't look at now. Death Cancels All Deaths was about a writer being haunted by a piece of piano music. I'm really sorry I can't look at that one, because that type of idea always interests me.
And then Bedtime, a story about a young woman and a haunted bed, no less, which may again symbolize her imprisonment in an unhappy marriage. And she seems to be in some way confined to this haunted bed, or spends more and more time in it.
They do sort of bring up some interesting ideas and different takes on how to work with ghost stories in a contemporary setting in this series.
Yes, I mean, as we discuss these other stories, we can really see producer Innes Lloyd's intentions in producing supernatural episodes with these contemporary themes, looking at mental health, looking at relationships, looking at a certain degree of middle-class comfort going on. Talking about gaslighting, there was an episode called Smith, which featured appropriately enough, a spooky waxwork museum and a young man who was trying to find a replacement for his girlfriend, I gather. So that sounds intriguing as well. We will always love a creepy waxwork show.
Oh, how bizarre that would have been. I'm sure it could have been quite an interesting production, but wow.
Yeah.
Two in the Morning was about an unhappy man who finds he has a strange doppelganger, and people seem to like the double more than they like the original. So also could be very interesting and sounds reminiscent of an old episode of Alfred Hitchcock Presents. So interesting stuff there too.
And of course, we've got the scripts on the DVD, but it's not the same. We'd love to have seen these productions, and how sad again that we don't have the entire series.
Yes, and they do have this sort of theme of the sort of subtle criticisms of middle-class lifestyles and where people have come from and where they are now and this sort of thing.
Yes, and you know, we talked about this with Robin Redbreast, which was broadcast on the Play for Today strand. Again, the same author as A Woman Sobbing, John Bowen. And this idea of the move, the affluent moving to the countryside, leaving London and moving out to the country, and some of the strange things that they might encounter. So there was, you can see this theme of the sort of like the middle classes doing quite well and then coming up against some strange and supernatural and troubling elements.
Yeah, it's interesting stuff. They're definitely able to sort of play with some of those issues using the supernatural as a way to do that.
And we'll also mention the other anthologies, or a few of the other anthology series, which, as we said last time, very popular, it would seem, in the 1960s and 1970s. We've touched upon, in fact, we've done episodes on Frankenstein and Dracula from ITV's Mystery and Imagination series that ran from 1966 to 1970. There's still other shows on those discs that we may get to at some point in our future.
Yes, a number of those are not really dealing with supernatural or science fiction ideas at all, but some of them do. We also talked about the surviving episodes of Out of the Unknown, which ran from 1965 to 1971 and started off being quite science fiction oriented with adaptations from Isaac Asimov and John Wyndham and so on. The last couple of years or so in the 70s, that was in color and it was much more a supernatural anthology or horror anthology type of show.
And we may, who knows, we may come back to Out of the Unknown at some point in the future as well, Brian.
One never knows. And of course, there is BBC's annual event, A Ghost Story for Christmas, which was running at this time. And Christmas Eve of 1972 was the broadcast of A Warning to the Curious. So that was quite a big deal with that happening as well.
And regular listeners may have worked this out already. Christmas 1972, golden age of television ghost stories, it would seem. We got this series, Dead of Night, particularly with the episode The Exorcism, which we're going to come back to. A Warning to the Curious, as you say, Brian, possibly one of our favourites of the ghost story for Christmas strand. And then, of course, on Christmas Day, The Stone Tape. And we've done episodes about both those two productions, which you can find on our website.
Yes, definitely some interesting stuff there, for sure. That's quite a remarkable set of things for one Christmas season of a couple months.
Some real televisual highlights there. And while we're talking about anthology series, we do, obviously, there is the great long-running Tales of the Unexpected from the late 1970s, 1979 to 1988, to be precise. And Supernatural is also on our radar, another anthology set of strange tales from 1977. So it was a golden age for these shows, Dead of Night being one of them. Great stuff.
Yes, there is definitely a lot happening and interesting things. So we should get into some of our own thoughts more than we already have and go into more review mode about this. So, Eamon, what did you like about Dead of Night?
So I like the idea of contemporary ghost stories. I like this idea. In 1972, Innes Lloyd thought, let's do modern ghost stories without all the gothic trappings. Although, as we've said, he may have not completely avoided them. And, of course, we have to comment on the great array of talent in the creators, the names that we've called out as we've gone along. Because, Brian, we've really got some spectacular British TV people involved here, haven't we?
Yes, we do. And we have some wonderful actors showing up in here. And, yes, a great slate of writers and a very solid producer. So, yeah, I would agree with you on those things. What stands out to me with this series is how they use these supernatural ideas to deal with contemporary issues. I think that was really nicely done, and it's something that we think of as science fiction doing allegory for contemporary issues. Well, here with sort of supernatural ghost stories, I think they did a very nice job of looking at a number of issues, sometimes related ones in different episodes, sometimes not, but I really liked how they did that.
So let's touch upon each of the surviving episodes. Let's start with the first one, The Exorcism, first broadcast, possibly the first one that you watch on the discs. What did you make of this one, Brian? What did you like about this episode?
I like this one a lot, and I'll say right away that I think this is by far the best of the three. And it gives us really interesting ideas about the middle class sort of finding these older places, you know, these classic old cottages in this case, or houses from centuries past, and updating them to have all of these modern comforts in them. And it looks at, well, what is your new comfortable life you've put in this place? What is it sitting on top of in the past? You know, what is the real history? And maybe it's something quite uncomfortable. And you have that idea, and also the idea of, well, how were the sort of lower class or working class people treated in the past? And are we thinking about that and remembering and, you know, trying to avoid a repeat of history and, you know, what really happened in the past. And it sort of ties those things together. And I thought that was really well done.
It is a fantastic piece, The Exorcism. And you're quite right, Brian. It is the standout of the three episodes that survive. It's the one probably everybody may have heard of, hopefully have seen, because it's an astonishing piece of television. Four great performances, I think, of the, you know, the four characters. Anna Cropper, who we saw in Robin Redbreast, possibly the standout performance of the whole series that we've seen, of the three episodes. The moment when she is, slight spoilers here, I'm afraid, but when she is, let's say, possessed, is incredibly powerful. And it could have been, you know, in the hands of a lesser writer and a lesser actor, it could have been, I think, almost too much, but it's just so well done. And as you say, Brian, the way that this episode introduces those social themes, makes you think about the past, makes you think about these comfortable middle-class, well-off people moving to the country, and what have they taken over or what have they built upon? It's incredible. Great TV.
Yes. You also have a fantastic performance from Clive Swift. He's always entertaining to watch, but great performance from him in this. That was a highlight for me.
Clive Swift is always great. And, you know, again, he's on this in November 72. And on Christmas Eve, he's in A Warning to the Curious, playing Dr. Black, I believe. And, you know, he's just great, isn't he, Clive Swift?
And this one has, of these three, it really has the least of the issues with stereotypes and sexism and so on. It's a balanced cast where you have two men and two women. There is a point with one of the male characters doing something kind of nasty to make a point, but there's a lot that works really well, and all four characters have interesting things to say. They're all very much part of the drama. So yeah, there's a lot to like in that particular episode.
So that's great stuff. Let's turn to Return Flight, the Robert Holmes one, with Peter Barquith in the lead role. What about this one, Brian? What was the good parts of this episode?
Well, I like the ideas in this. I like the idea that there is this sort of phantom plane, maybe, that the lead character sees and flies around to evade it. And then there are all these questions about, well, we can't find anything there, and what actually happened. And you get sort of a feel for what did happen and what is actually going on at the end of the episode. So some of the ideas and the ending, I like those things. And the performance by the lead character was good too.
Yes, I mean, the interesting thing is what's actually happening in Return Flight. Is he being haunted? Or is it another chap who's just, unfortunately, from the stresses and strains of his own life and his work, is he, you know, slightly losing the plot? Because, as you say, it's not entirely clear if anybody else can witness the supernatural plane or hear the voices on the radio that he seems to hear. It is, I thought, perhaps, I mean, there's a few problems with it, which we'll mention in a moment, but I thought perhaps not the best of the three episodes, let's put it that way. It was the least of them for me, I think.
For me, this I would call the middle of the three. I liked what it was doing. I liked some of the performances in it. It just wasn't interesting enough. It was a little bit dull. That was the main issue for me in this one. A little bit of problems with stereotyping and them talking about the Germans. But on the whole, this I thought was okay. Certainly not as good as The Exorcism.
Yes, there is the thing about 1972 and they're talking about Germany and he's flying backwards and forwards to Germany. He's also talking about older pilots who served in the RAF during the war. So there is some slightly unfortunate stuff in reference to, you know, Germans in the episode. But as you say, for 1972, that probably was what people were saying, unfortunately, wasn't it, Brian?
Well, yes. And some of, you know, the talking about the war in the past, and some of that I thought was quite good and made a lot of sense. It was just, you know, there were one or two remarks that that set me on edge. And as you say, it's 1972. It's of its time. But I thought this one was okay. It just needed to be a little more interesting and keep me a little bit more involved than it did.
So let's turn to the last of the three, the very last episode to be broadcast, A Woman Sobbing, with Anna Massey in the central performance. This was a show, an episode that you probably had more problems with, Brian, than me. Shall we start with some good points? What did you like about the episode?
Well, I thought there was a good performance from Anna Massey there, for sure. And there were some nice things with this. The actual sobbing, when you hear the woman sobbing in this house, is very disconcerting. It's very well done. And I don't know whose sobbing it was, but they found someone who could do that sort of crying and weeping so it gets under your skin. It was very effective.
It is eerie and heartrending, isn't it? Yes. And Anna Massey is very good. The men in this episode are all, well, I suppose there's only the two main male characters, but they're fairly, they're not particularly likable at all, are they, Brian?
No, they aren't. And they get into some unfortunate stereotypes of women and also of men and some sexism. And again, like Return to Flight, there are sort of some international stereotype things showing up as well. And those made this episode a bit uncomfortable for me, and I didn't enjoy it as much as the others.
Right. I thought that in displaying her husband and his friend in London, who have these rather blokey chats in his office, while leering at his secretary, I thought that they were trying, you know, John Bowen was trying to make a point about this and the contrast between his relationship with Anna Massey. And they both are sort of like, we get brief sequences or brief flashes of the sort of, that they both have a fantasy life, which I thought was interesting. But yes, it does look a little bit in places rather sort of sexist and very sort of 1972 attitudes to women in the house and home, it seemed.
Yeah, and as we can see just from looking at the three episodes we have here, sometimes you get something that leans into those attitudes from the time, and others you don't have nearly as much of that. So it is worth noting that you do have a lot of that in this episode, and it does possibly make it a little bit harder to watch now.
Yeah. I did like the stuff of Anna Massey sort of creeping around at night in the attic trying to find the source of the sobbing while also getting some sort of flashes of a body. And then also, I think there's a creepy rocking horse in the attic. That's always, you know, that's guaranteed to give you a few chills. And interestingly, she becomes convinced there's some sort of recording or broadcasting device hidden in the walls of the attic and starts banging holes, which I don't know why, Brian, but for some reason it reminded me of a modern horror called His House, which has just dropped on Netflix as we record, where one of the characters is knocking holes in the wall trying to find something supernatural. But anyway, I liked all that attic stuff. I thought that was good, creepy. And I thought Anna Massey was terrific, but she is playing up against some difficult stuff.
Yeah, some of those things that focused on her were really interesting and really strong. There is a section of this where she goes to a priest looking for an exorcism. It's odd that there's a different episode that is called The Exorcism, but A Woman Sobbing is the one that has much more about traditional religious exorcisms in it. And she goes to someone asking for one, and he says no, and she proceeds to attempt it herself. And that was very well done, and it was really interesting. And for me, that really was getting into these sort of gothic elements that Innes Lloyd was saying that were not in this series.
Could you have swapped the titles of the first and last episode of this series?
I don't think so. I think A Woman Sobbing was the right name for this story, for sure. The first one, I don't know if a different name would have would have been better or not, maybe. But these are the titles we have, and that's not so, you know, and that's okay.
Yeah. So I think we've sort of indicated our orders of preference for these three episodes. Anything else in the plus or minus columns for the whole series that you noted, Brian?
Well, The Exorcism is definitely a big standout here. Through all of them, I think it was sort of the stereotypes and sexism and things that stood out on the negative side the most, rather than problems with the performances or the production and that sort of thing. Although it would have been nice maybe with the direction to have things a little more dynamic in Return Flight. But on the whole, it's a pretty good show. It's a nice set of contemporary ghost stories from the Christmas season. So all in all, yeah, this was a nice one.
Okay, great stuff from the BFI for putting out a quality release of the three episodes. Nice booklet, nice extras on the disc as well, that you can find the scripts of the missing episodes, which of course brings me to the big downside, which is, you know, we don't have the other four episodes, some of which sound particularly intriguing. You like the one about the idea of the one about the haunted piano piece, and I like the one about the spooky waxwork. But yes, such a shame that we don't have those to look at.
Yes, indeed. So I think we should get to our recommendations. Do you want to start with this one, Eamon?
Okay, I think people can work this one out. I was very enamoured of this BFI box set. £15, so about £5 an episode. The Exorcism is certainly worth that price. And if you haven't seen it before, then I would suggest getting hold of this box set and watching that episode. The other two are variable in quality. They have problems with some unfortunate 1972 stuff. But on the whole, I just love these releases from the BFI. I love the Ghost Stories for Christmas release. And I love this release of Dead of Night. Do get it for Anna Cropper's performance. And in fact, all of them in The Exorcism. So I'm going to give it a hearty recommendation. What about yourself, Brian?
I'm going to give this a slightly more cautious recommendation. The Exorcism is wonderful. It's a great episode. The other two are okay. So I would say, if this is your type of thing, if you like contemporary ghost stories and having some of these problems as we look at it now is not a deal breaker for you, sure, this is worth getting. So yeah, a little bit more cautious for me, but yes, it's a good one.
Great stuff. And if you've seen the episodes, please drop by the Facebook page and tell us what you made of them all. And particularly if you watch it as a result of these reviews that we've done, please let us know.
Yes, absolutely. And if anyone actually remembers the other four episodes from 1972, please let us know what you have to say about that. It would be, even if it's just remembering that you saw them, it would be lovely to hear that from someone.
Fascinating.
So, in summary, Dead of Night brought us a number of separate contemporary ghost stories that were intended to avoid the traditional gothic elements, which for the most part they did. And they gave us a series of stories that dealt with various contemporary issues with the supernatural and ghost story elements being used as a way to present those and deal with those, particularly in The Exorcism, where we see two modern couples in this cottage that is quite old but has been turned into a more modern place, and looking at what was there in the past. Also, Return Flight, we see an older pilot in the later parts of his career looking back at the early days and at what pilots were doing flying during the Second World War before he was a pilot. And of course, A Woman Sobbing, we get these ideas of what is embedded in this sort of haunted way, or maybe what is more like a mental illness and things of that nature, and looking at these sorts of things. So it's an interesting perspective of looking at different issues through these supernatural ideas.
Great stuff. Do tell us, what was your favorite Christmas ghost of 1972?
Interesting ones to choose from there, for sure.
And please come back and join us next time when we start our 2021 shows with some more Terry Pratchett, this time writing with Neil Gaiman, and the show is called Good Omens, and this was an Amazon show from 2019, possibly one of the more recent things we've covered, and let's hope for Good Omens for 2021, Brian.
Yes, absolutely, and very popular book it was based on, and a very popular show. I know a lot of people enjoyed that a lot, so it will be good to look at it and give our own take on it. Until then, you can find all of our past episodes on BritishInvaders.com. And if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our group there and join in on the discussions. And we will be listing our first three shows of 2021 very soon.
And also search for the Voice of Geeks Network, which you'll find at vognetwork.com. You'll find British Invaders is one of several shows there. Plus, they do lots of stuff on Twitch, streaming and so on, about gaming. Come along and join in the fun at vognetwork.com.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. Until next time, it's Eamon in England also signing off.